From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
It's Trillium Week, the first week of May at Garden in the Woods, the headquarters of Native Plant Trust in Framingham, Massachusetts, the nation's oldest plant conservation organization with more than a century of history. Well, with a little help from today's guest, it can be Trillium Week in your garden too around this time each year. More about growing trilliums in a moment, but first, these messages.
Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com. Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com.
Uli Lorimer has made a career of working with native plants, including a diversity of trillium species. He was longtime curator of the Native Flora Garden at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, and in 2019 became director of horticulture at Native Plant Trust, the former New England Wildflower Society, which was founded in 1900. Welcome back to the show, Uli, and happy Trillium Week. Mine are opening up by the second over here, too.
Thank you. I'm really thrilled to be here, and I'm thrilled to have another chance to discuss trilliums, one of my favorite groups of wildflowers.
Yeah, and so Trillium Week includes in-person events in Framingham at Garden in the Woods, but also I was so excited that you're having some virtual ones, including some free ones where people can really learn about growing them and so forth on their computers from wherever they are. Yes.
Yeah, so every year, usually right around the 1st of May, which is when most of our trilliums begin to open up and flower, we celebrate Trillium Week. And so this week, this year, it runs from May 1st to May 8th. And we have a full slate of programs from sort of daily workshops and education classes. If you are fortunate enough to live near the garden, you can come and take advantage of a trillium tour that we do, which is led by our very knowledgeable garden guides. And this year we also have a new phone app. So if you go into your Apple or Google Play and look for Native Plant Trust, you'll find our new app there, and you can do a self-guided tour, which features both a general tour of the garden, but also a specific one featuring our trilliums for those folks who prefer, a self-paced tour through the garden. So we're really happy to be able to launch that in time for Trillium Week.
Great. So what I'll do is, with the transcript of this conversation that we're going to have on awaytogarden.com, I will include the links to all of the information, again, as well as some of the virtual events that people anywhere can look at. So I believe that most species of trilliums on the planet are in North America, and I've seen different numbers on how many and so forth, but we kind of have most of them here, don't we?
Yes, we do. There are sort of globally about 50 species right now, the current taxonomy, and I'd say, with the exception of one or two genera that exist in Eastern Asia, they're almost all entirely in North America, and the bulk of them in the eastern part of North America. There's a few that are in Western North America as well. But by far, they are Eastern North American plants, and the sort of center of diversity for them is in the Southeast.
Yes.
And despite their growing in the Southeast, they're actually all fully hardy to be grown all the way up in New England. And in fact, one of the best reference books for trilliums was one written by Fred and Roberta Case, titled Trilliums. And they grew all the possible trilliums you could imagine in their garden in Michigan, and everything was fully hardy there.
Right. I have Luteum, a yellow-flowered one, which I see always referred to as southeastern, but it's zone 4 hardy. And that's true of a lot of native plants that are hardier much farther north of their current range on the earth.
Yes, this is very true.
So there's a few species in Japan, yeah? Is that where they are?
Yes, there's some in Japan and eastern far eastern Russia, and then a few that are in Alaska and some on the sort of Pacific Northwest coast and some of the mountainous regions there.
So Trillium, the name, it gives us a clue, T-R-I, try. Tell us about their sort of biology, so to speak.
Yeah, so they are, when they're fully mature, the leaves, there are three leaves, and then all of the reproductive parts are also in multiples of three. So the sepals, the petals, the anthers, the numbers of ovules within the ovary are all multiples of three. And this is another hallmark of monocots, which is another sort of bigger group of plants, and trilliums belong to that. So they have floral parts in multiples of threes, as opposed to multiples of four or five or more.
What's interesting, you said when they're mature, or when they're grown up, sort of, they have these three parts. When, first of all, they don't germinate very fast at all from seed, and when they do, I don't know, a year or two or however many later, you may see one little leaf, not three. And then I think in like, depending on the species, in like year three or four, you may see the first true looking arrangement of three. I mean, it's a slow process, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, they are very slow to grow. And I think it's, you know, one of the reasons why they're not more widely available in the nursery trade is because they take a long time to grow from seed. And you're correct that they you know, the first year that they do germinate, they only produce a single leaf, and then maybe year two or three, they'll produce two leaves. And then usually by third or fourth year, depending if you've got good growing conditions, you'll begin to see the characteristic three leaves. And then from there, it may take them up to 5 years before they actually produce a flower. And so a lot of it also has to do with the fact that this is a plant that will go dormant once the summer heat and drought arrives, and it retreats back into a thick rhizome. And it takes a while for the plant to store up energy and thicken that rhizome in order to be able to make flowers every year. So if you see a particularly old clump that may have multiple flowering stems, you're probably looking at something that's 20, 30, maybe even 40 years old.
Amazing. So I want to delve more into some of the sort of how they grow and propagation and so forth. But first I want to ask you, and because I know part of what Native Plant Trust does is also has a whole operation, Asami Farm, that ethically propagates and grows and sells plants. So I want to ask more about that. But first, the collection, if we come to virtual or in-person Trillium Week, the collection at Garden in the Woods in Framingham, Mass. Now, how diverse is it? How many different kinds of trilliums would we see there?
So we are a nationally accredited collection holder. This is an accreditation that we receive through the American Public Gardens Association. And I believe with our sister garden, the Mount Cuba Center in the Mid-Atlantic, are the only collection holders for the genus Trillium.
Oh.
And so what that means is that we have, right now, I think we've got 28 or 30 different taxa. And so these are different species and varieties and forms of the species represented in our garden. And so if you want to see them all in one place, there's no better place to come and see them than us if you're in New England. And if you happen to be in the Mid-Atlantic region, then be sure to check out the Mount Cuba Center because their collection is also spectacular.
Now, so you have them in a collection there at the garden. And but what I was fascinated to learn when I first came to where I garden, which is in sort of adjacent to the Berkshires of Massachusetts in New York State in the Hudson Valley, I thought, oh, there must be lots of different kinds of trilliums. And because I knew them as a gardener, you know what I mean? I had seen pictures of them in garden books and so forth, different species. And what I've learned over the years living here and doing projects with my local flora sort of nonprofit, the nonprofit agency doing the flora of my county, you know, sort of telling what grows here and what's native here and what's existing here, is that there are three in my county, three species in my county. And that the most popular ones in among gardeners that might have larger flowers or be a little more showy are not necessarily. So those taxa that you just spoke of having, they're not all literally native to Framingham, Massachusetts, are they?
No. So we recognize four taxa as four species of Trillium that are native to the ecoregions of New England. Mm-hmm. And so those are Trillium grandiflorum, the white wake robin, Trillium erectum, which is a red Trillium, which also has lots of colorful names like stinking Benjamin or the wet dog Trillium, Trillium cernuum, which is a nodding Trillium, and it's sort of a little bit of a bashful species because it holds its flower underneath of the leaves, and then what many people consider one of the most beautiful Trilliums of all of the species is the painted Trillium, Trillium undulatum. And it features, you know, sort of wavy petals and this really beautiful splotch of, you know, pink maroon in the center, and that kind of bleeds out along the veins of the petals. And it's quite a remarkable plant if you ever come across it. It is, however, one of the ones that is nearly impossible to cultivate because it has specific relationships with fungi in the soil. And so it's one that is probably one of the only local species that we don't cultivate here because we can't. I have heard from many, many other, you know, native plant experts that if you ever see it for sale in a nursery, it's probably been dug out of the wild.
Right.
And that you shouldn't waste your money or your time trying to cultivate it because without the fungi present, it'll be a not a successful venture.
Right. Plus, by buying it, you'd be supporting theft from the wild. Yes. So we don't want to do that.
And that's something that faces a lot of Trillium species in general. And because they are so slow to grow from seed or from divisions, folks think it's a lot easier just to go up in the woods and dig them up and sell them for a quick buck. And so it just really pays to make sure that whatever nursery you patronize, that you ask them how they were sourced and if they were done so ethically and morally. And if you know that, you know, places like Garden in the Woods and our nursery out in western Massachusetts, the Nasami Farm, we do grow all of ours from seed or from stock beds where we make divisions. And so there's never any chance of us digging them up for the wild because that's against our whole mission.
Right.
We'd like to keep wild things wild.
Right. And so the key phrase is nursery propagated, not nursery grown. Nursery grown may mean, oh, we dug them up and now we're growing them in pots and going to sell them to you. Whereas
correct.
Nursery propagated is where we're the direction we want to look, I think.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely correct.
Yeah.
And there's other plants too, I think, you know, perhaps as a separate discussion sometime. Ramps is another one that I think could be nursery propagated, but is oftentimes ripped out of the woods because it's cheaper and faster than waiting.
If I see one more social media posting of everybody digging up ramps in the wild, I mean, I could just scream. I shouldn't probably even say that out loud because people will now yell at me on social media. But honestly, I mean, it's a plant. It's a native plant, and it's unethical and probably illegal to dig it up, and you know what I mean? And now my blood is boiling.
People want to have these beautiful plants in their gardens, and for good reason, because they're charismatic, they're gorgeous, they're, you know, it's a real sign that spring has arrived, and to meet the demand that people have for these plants, you know, we're not patient enough oftentimes, and so people do turn to unethical methods to supply the demand, unfortunately.
Right, but they are available, usually bare root, you know, early in the season. You can buy these plants from an ethical supplier and then have them in your garden in a way that supports an ethical supplier and, you know, everyone wins. I mean, so,
yep.
Yeah. So So we were talking about, you know, from seed, how slow they are. And again, I think it depends. I was reading for a New York Times story I did for last week. I was reading a book by Carol Gracie about spring wildflowers of the Northeast. Yeah. And how, you know, looking at pictures of the rhizomes and how, you know, you were talking about how if you see a lot of flower stems coming up, you know, it's a really old clump and so forth, that if you lift them to divide them, if you lifted an old clump like that and you saw the many different rhizomes or even just one, they have like little ridges on them, like these sort of, and how you can approximate their age. Of course, just like with a rattlesnake's rattle, some may have fallen off on an old one. You know, the end may have fallen off, so it's not precise, but that they've found ones that are approximated to be as old as 70 years, rhizomes as old as 70 years. Quite amazing.
Yeah, I mean, they're slow and steady, and those ridges are what are called terminal bud scars. So every year, at one end of the rhizome, the plant will make a new bud, which will contain the leaves and the flower, and it leaves a little ring. So you can count back from the growing tip, and you can see approximately how many years. I know, and we've had ones that maybe are as long as my finger and can be 20 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, they are, you know, patience is rewarded in this genus. And I think as, you know, as any gardener understands that, you know, delayed gratification is the best thing about gardening. It's not immediate gratification. And watching this plant come back every year and get bigger every year, is really satisfying. And, you know, they grow with you. That's the best way I can put it.
So let's talk about, I mean, my first ones, and I've told this story many times on the show, so I'll tell the very short version. When I first came to this house 35 years ago, I was crawling around out front by the front porch, and I spied three little green things just tucked under the edge of the wooden front porch floor. And I grabbed them, you know, out of the soil, and they turned out to be trilliums. What did I know? And I put them somewhere else in a bed I was making. And now I have, it's Trillium erectum, the wake robin, or all those other funny names you said. And now I have many, many, many. So that was how I learned to propagate trilliums. Not the most elegant or professional manner, just curiosity driven. But it was at bloom time. And over the years, I've always done so. If I have a big clump and I want to continue to move them around, that's when I do it, because I can see them then, because as you said, I can see where the clumps are, because as you said, they can behave as ephemerals. They can go dormant in the heat of summer, especially in more southern areas, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, with patients there, they can spread with a little help of our friends, the ants. And which oftentimes, you know, when you come across bigger patches in the woods, they just seem to be kind of randomly dotted here and there. It's because ants plant the seeds, and it's not by mistake that they're attracted to the trilliums. The seeds that the trilliums produce have a tasty little ant snack attached to the seed. It's called an elaiosome, but it's really sort of fat and lipid and protein, and the ants love it. And as soon as the capsule opens, they'll come and collect all the seeds and then take them away. And after they've eaten the little snack, they'll deposit the seed into the leaf litter. And then 2-3 years later, there's another trillium.
Yes.
And it's just, it's a wonderful, you know, if you're fortunate enough to garden the same space over a long period of time, you begin to notice how, there's one that popped up over there. I never planted one there. How did it get there? Thank you, ants. You know, they're industrious and wonderful, and over time they'll help plant your own garden for you.
So I've read that this plant-ant mutualism that you just described, where they go to get the lipid-rich snack and in the process walk away and move it to a different place away from the parent plant and plant it, quote-unquote, that as many as 35% of eastern woodland wildflowers depend on that mutualism, you know, that many species do. So it's pretty fascinating.
I mean, things like bloodroot and your Dutchman's breeches and squirrel corn, Dicentras, they all need the help from the ants to get things around.
Yeah. So if we want to grow them and we buy ethically, whether bare root or potted up, we buy ethically nursery propagated trilliums for many of them are woodland species.
Yes.
So anything else about making them happy, or, and especially I'm fascinated in what do you at Garden of the Woods, do they grow just among themselves or do you have them ever with other things or?
Yes. I mean, so they grow, I think, so for most of them, and I'll come to two specific examples that are sort of, that don't follow this trend, but for many of them, they like rich soils. So, you know, good organic matter, content, but not too wet. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that is just as a quick tangent, a challenge for nursery people to grow them in pots, because oftentimes the soil media stays too wet, or especially early in the spring, and then the rhizomes rot.
Right.
So a certain amount of drainage is important for them to keep the rhizomes from rotting. Because they have sort of a strong growing point and they can push up through things, we've planted them into big clumps of, let's say, like oak sedge, different kinds of sedges.
Oh.
We have them with woodland phlox, barren strawberry, you know, any kind of like low ground cover kind of a plant that you could think of. They're really wonderful companions because they'll just kind of push up through that. And then one of my favorite combinations that we have going here at Garden of the Woods is with what's called long beach fern, Phegopteris connectilis. It's a fern that spreads slowly through rhizomes, and we've paired that with the white wake robin Trillium grandiflorum. And so they both, you know, the new fronds are emerging just as the trilliums are blooming, and it's just a delightful combination.
Wow. See, this is a whole new thing for me. I'm in trouble now. Now I'm going to start pairing them with the ground covery kind of things. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
You know,
yeah.
You can also feature them as a, you know, as a clump or sort of as an accent, but we tend to like to have as much of the beds full of plants, sort of akin to, you know, a green mulch, if you would like, and then having other things emerge out of them, because that's the way you see them in the wild.
Yeah.
Plants grow intimately with one another,
yeah,
and not so far away that they can't touch each other. And so I think ground covers and trilliums are really wonderful partners together.
Yeah, I like, if I just have a little of something special among these sort of ephemerals or early woodland spring bloomers, I tend to put it along the edge of a path, you know, if I just, when I'm just getting started, so that I know, even if it's not a mass, and it isn't going to be for many, many years, you know, do you know what I mean, where it's a little treasure right along the edge of the path, mm-hmm, where I would be, even in the early spring, I might be walking, so.
That's very good.
Yeah.
I mean, you really want to enjoy them while they're there, because you know they don't stay much later into the summer. Like I said, if it gets too hot or too dry, then they'll just retreat back to that rhizome, and you have to wait a whole another year.
Right. If you do want to fall dig, if you do have a big clump and you do want to fall dig, it's good to mark them while they're up though and awake, right? So that you don't dig in the wrong place. Yeah.
Well, in fact, this actually raises another good point, that the best time to dig and divide them is actually right after they're done flowering, rather than in the fall.
Right.
Because you'll see them, obviously, you'll know, and then they'll still have a little bit more of the growing season to kind of get established once they've been divided up.
Oh.
And then, you know, for many of the ephemerals, they actually, you know, they will continue to, quote-unquote, grow even when they're not above ground. They'll be busy making that next year's bud already, and they kind of slowly grow all the way through the winter so that when the cues for spring arrive, the bud is already ready to go and just has to push out of the ground.
Well, Uli, happy Trillium Week. I mean, we're going to tell people, as we wind down here, tell people again with the transcript of this show on awaytogarden.com, I'm going to give all the links to how they can virtually or in person participate. And what's your favorite? Just real quick as we finish up, what's your favorite? Do you have one?
It's like being asked to pick a favorite child. It's really hard. I would say Trillium erectum, I think, would be one of my favorites.
The one I started with.
Yeah, just because it's a great example of a flower that doesn't, not all flowers have to have really nice smells. And I like that this one sort of turns the tables a little bit, and it doesn't smell entirely fantastic. But it's because it wants fungus gnats and things to come and pollinate it. I think they have really beautiful, attractive foliage, and that dark maroon color is not an easy one to find in garden plants. And it just has great sort of cultural connections. I mentioned Stinking Benjamin and Wet Dog Trillium. Stinking Willie is another name for it that I think is great. Bloody Butchers.
There's all sorts of
fantastic and very colorful names for these plants. And I think probably don't have time to get into it, but there's a whole other sort of human connection with these plants, which spans long periods of time. They've been used medicinally. And I think it also really, it sort of underpins why people connect with them so very much and why they're such treasured members of the spring flora.
Well, thank you for making the time today, and I'll talk to you again soon, if not about trilliums, about something else. Thanks, Uli.
I look forward to it. Thank you so much, Margaret.
Programming and underwriting support from Brushwood Nursery. For more than 20 years, Brushwood Nursery has shipped the finest selection of clematis and other vines all over the United States with full-gallon-sized plant and free shipping. Their website is full of beautiful pictures and information on growing clematis. BrushwoodNursery.com. Programming and underwriting support from Garden Tool Company. Garden Tool Company's wide selection of heirloom quality tools for your gardening passion is backed by outstanding customer service, fast shipping, and ongoing support. GardenToolCompany.com.
And thanks to all the rest of you for listening too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify, and find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or on Facebook and on Instagram as @AwayToGarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.